Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
The fifth gate opened.
The dark side will devour those who lack the power to control it. It's a fierce storm of emotion that annihilates anything in its path. It lays waste to the weak and the unworthy.
Quote, Darth Bane.
In around 3900 BBY, refugees from the deep core planet Grismalt settled on a far-flung mid-rim world of Naboo. At the time of the human settlement of Naboo, the sentient Gungan species had an ancient history on the world, though their involvement with the galactic community was sparse. Grismalt's society was highly stratified, with noble classes donning flamboyant, expensive clothes and constructing impressive and highly decorative buildings. Those settlers of aristocratic family lines brought their traditions to Naboo and became the six royal houses of Naboo. There is an old legend Kasinga Palpatine used to tell about the royal houses. Each house represented a gate. Beyond the gates of the house Nabiri, Tapalo, Parnelli, and Varuna lay the gates of House Palpatine. And behind these gates lurked chaos. Noble, statesman, political philosopher, scientist, chancellor, emperor, Sith Lord. Sheev Palpatine, also known as Darth Sidious, and eventually as the Emperor, was one of the most powerful beings to ever rule the galaxy. Even going through life under various identities, Palpatine coerced, manipulated, murdered, and deceived his way into galactic politics, always pursuing his own hidden agenda. Ultimately, his cunning paved the road to becoming emperor of a majority of the galaxy. Palpatine, living his duplicitous life, was both a skilled statesman and adept Force user, having mastered the power of the dark side of the Force. Though he tried to end the rule of two tradition, he too met his end through betrayal, ending the reign and terror of the most influential man in galactic history. The Scarlet House.
Sheev Palpatine was born in the year 82 BBY on the planet Naboo. By his birth, House Palpatine had little influence or wealth compared to Naboo's other four aristocratic family lines. This became a source of resentment and tension between Sheev and his father, Kasinga. House Palpatine's color was scarlet, and was used by Palpatine for various purposes throughout his life. As Chancellor, he painted his office red. While retaining this position, he created a special security unit who wore completely red uniforms. As a Sith, his lightsaber was the traditional crimson. As a young man, his hands would be drenched in the scarlet lifeblood of his family. House Palpatine's family crest prominently featured its color and depicted notable Nubian animals. A vicious primate called a Virmok, the soaring Iwa, and the graceful but dangerous Zalaka. Though ruled by a monarch, Naboo elected its king or queen from one of the five noble houses democratically, and also had a constitution. Members of the noble houses were expected to train and work as civil servants. By the age of 12, those of noble blood were drafted into mandatory public service. Sheev's father, Kosinga Palpatine, was a physically abusive man and patriarch of the house. Much to his son's distaste, Kosinga arrogantly believed that he had taken House Palpatine to the zenith of its power. Sheev could not respect such a small-minded man and considered him to be incompetent and undeserving of his own self-importance. Sheev considered his mother weak and subservient to her father. As evidence for his opinion, the historical record does not even contain her name. In his words, quote, "She espouses no views of her own, only because he has made her subservient to him." Unquote. Sheev was the eldest of five siblings. He had two brothers and two sisters. House Palpatine was not as prestigious or wealthy as other noble houses of Naboo, and skewed isolationist and conservative, eschewing involvement on the galactic stage. Palpatine the Younger knew his father harbored jealousy towards the more renowned noble houses and monarchs of Naboo. Kosinga's inability to turn envy into ambition earned scorn from his eldest son. From childhood, Palpatine was an elitist. He believed that his destiny lay beyond provincial Naboo and the Chamal sector. As soon as he could appreciate House Palpatine's position in Naboo's political system, he harbored aspirations to elevate his house and bring Naboo to the galactic stage. In Sheev's time, his homeworld was not yet a member of the Galactic Republic. His father seemed satisfied to be a second-rate house on a single world. It seems that the future Emperor did not inherit his all-encompassing vision and a will to power from either parent. Sheev had a turbulent youth. His father hated him for his refusal to obey like the rest of his family. Kosinga was always weary of his son, even having his parentage tested at a very early age. Furthermore, the man had infanticidal fantasies about his eldest son. Sheev respected force of will and what a person could generate by that will. His father inherited his wealth and title. To Sheev, it was an accident that Kosinga had any influence at all. From an early age, Sheev placed himself atop an ethical pedestal. The normal laws and mores of society applied to other, less unique people. The unique moral code he created for himself in childhood was a current that ran throughout his life. Everything he did according to his own special designs, to serve himself. Guilt and remorse had no place in his idiosyncratic worldview. Although he was interested in politics, he did not admit it until later in life, perhaps trying to distance himself from his father. Sheev was fond of art, but not of the ostentatious kind seen in Naboo's architecture. He would eventually become a collector of precious, ancient, and sometimes forbidden artifacts. Unlike other aspects of his youth, he did not abandon this pastime, which grew to massive proportions later in life. Kosinga used credits to protect the family's reputation from Sheev's rebellious antics, and to buy clout with the other noble houses of Naboo. Rather than being grateful, This only made the young man hate his father more. Further adding to the disdain she felt for his father was the fact that the only successful political maneuvering he ever managed was sustaining an extramarital affair with the wife of a rival. Although he was a bright child, Sheev was a failure academically. He attended and was quickly expelled from many renowned schools. The failure was behavioral rather than scholastic. In the same way that he could not conform to his father's rules, so too did he buck against the school system. Sheev was constantly admonished for petty misdemeanors at school. Kasingo was always there to bail him out of trouble and get him accepted into the next academy after an expulsion. To do this, his father bribed school officials as well as threw around what little political influence he had. Kasinga attempted to buy his son's respect and submission with an expensive land speeder. Although not necessarily coming from a healthy place, this gift created the one place of wellness in their relationship. Though their relationship was tumultuous, they connected through the sport of speeder piloting. This small section of domestic unity was short-lived. Through reckless piloting, Palpatine the Junior killed two pedestrians in a speeder accident. It is believed that Sheev was criminally responsible for their deaths. But his father once again bought his son a reprieve using unearned credits. Palpatine began to fantasize about a lucrative career as a speeder racer after some early success in competitive racing. Sheev eventually rejected his given name and wanted to only be known as Palpatine while racing. He wanted to sever relations with the name his parents had given him and associate more closely with the glory of House Palpatine's past. The creation and embodiment of multiple identities was another skill he would master over the course of his life. Another hobby afforded him by his privilege was the collection of Sith artifacts and ancient texts. To acquire these dark objects, Sheev used his house's always obliging coffers. As the young Palpatine continued to research ancient Sith lore, he became fascinated and felt connected with the ideology which emphasized the acquisition of power. Unlike many other prominent Force adepts, Sheev displayed no manifestations of latent Force abilities until his young adulthood, except perhaps the ability to hide himself from Force detection. His connection with the Force and the Order of Sith Lords was entirely academic until his association with Higo Damask, also known as Darth Plagueis. After receiving a somewhat fractured primary education, Palpatine was admitted into Theed University. Any normal person would have been denied admittance on account of his by then extensive record of petty crimes, but Kasinga's money spoke. Through the political contacts afforded him by his pedigree, Sheev began working with the aid of the Senator of Naboo while studying. Higo Damask II was the chief executive of a powerful financial group called Damask Holdings. Their interests were tied closely to the Trade Federation and the Intergalactic Banking Clan. While these two corporations were motivated solely by profit, Damask Holdings sought to bring the Sith Grand Plan to fruition. Its massive funds were the accumulation of centuries of Sith plotting, starting with a fortune Darth Bane inherited. Shortly after a landmark experiment which resulted in the creation of Maxichlorians, Darth Plagueis' master, Darth Tenebrous, had a premonition involving a shadowy figure whom the Force could not detect. Plagueis would have done well to share his master's anxiety over this vision. In 65 BBY, Higo visited Naboo on a business trip. While there, he oversaw the construction of a new spaceport in Theed, which would serve to export Naboo's extensive natural plasma reserves to the wider galaxy. The obstacle Higo faced in achieving these goals was Naboo's prevailing conservative and isolationist political climate. It was this tension between Naboo and the rest of the galaxy that Darth Sidious would eventually manipulate as a catalyst for the final stages of the grand plan. The reigning monarch at the time was opposed to the new spaceport, and so Higo acted as a lobbyist for Bon T'Pollo, who was then running for election as King of Naboo, and sought to integrate the world into the larger galactic community. Spies on Naboo told Damask of a young informant whose services Bon T'Pollo had utilized in his campaign against the traditionalists, Sheev Palpatine. When Higo learned that this young upstart's father was a staunch supporter of the traditionalist political faction, he had to meet the treacherous heir to the Scarlet House. After meeting at the Legislative Youth Assembly's headquarters, Higo took Sheev for a cruise in a luxury airspeeder. Damask saw in the aspiring speeder pilot weaknesses that he could exploit. Ambition, greed, and hatred must have oozed from Palpatine. Higo did not realize at the time, but it was in fact Sheev who would exploit Higo's overconfidence in his own abilities and lack of caution. This kind of far-reaching manipulation was only the first of many exhibitions of Palpatine's mastery of the skill. After their introduction, Palpatine agreed to be a political spy for Damask, but with the condition that he report only to Damask. Higo agreed and shortly left Naboo. Palpatine left an indelible impression on Higo, who in the following days began to see how the young man could be in just the right position to slowly, insidiously, maneuver to the highest position in galactic politics, Supreme Chancellor of the Republic. He would, of course, only be a figurehead, as per the Sith grand plan. Higo, or rather, Darth Plagueis, would be the true power behind the throne. Months later, Sheev and Kasinga got into a bitter dispute aboard the family starship. The elder Palpatine admitted that he had always wanted to kill his son. That was the last straw. Fed up from a lifetime of not being able to conform to his family's restrictions, Sheev drew on his latent dark side powers. A slaughter of the entire Palpatine family and their employees followed. He smashed his father against the bulkhead of the ship repeatedly, until his body was nothing but tenderized meat, the life gone from him. Sheev then reached out to his only true friend in the galaxy for help, Higo Damask. The Sith Lord saw to it that all evidence of the massacre was erased, and thereafter took Palpatine on as his apprentice. By the time of Palpatine's political ascendancy, virtually all records of his family had been destroyed, plunging it into the chaos of unwritten history.
The Book of Anger. As lethal as you must be to become a lord, a Darth is the embodiment of death. Don't forget that. Quote, Darth Barriss.
Plagueis could not have been more pleased with the unbridled rage and power shown by the Palpatine heir. The murder of his family, and the force powers Sheev used to do it, showed that he had what it took to be trained as a Sith. His position in galactic politics, as well as his burgeoning aptitude in that domain, meant that he could even be a figurehead chancellor. The pseudonym adopted by the Sith Lords is traditionally bestowed upon them by their master. Sometimes this was sought by ritual practices, which invoked the dark side of the Force. the master would communicate with some personification of the dark side, which would answer a question leading to a name for the apprentice. In the case of Darth Sidious, Plagueis saw a being who was stealthily treacherous and deceitful, an insidious character. After naming Darth Sidious, Plagueis began to instruct his pupil in the use of the Force, combat skills, and politics. It is possible that prior to the massacre, Sheev Palpatine had been inadvertently using a rare and powerful Force technique for his entire life, Force Blank, when they first met. Darth Plagueis could not perceive the young man's presence in the Force. If this ability was only instinctual at first, it became intentional later. Plagueis himself was quite skilled with hiding himself from Force perceptions, as his Jedi associates never knew of the Sith Lord among them. The same can be said of Sidious later on in his career, as he had plenty of contact with powerful Force adepts, but none of them suspected a thing. Later on in life, Sidious demonstrated the ability to extend his Force cloak over a second individual when he took his apprentice, Maul, to the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. While there, Sidious whispered the name of every Jedi who entered or left into the boy's ears, preparing him for a future as a phantom-like assassin. A moment equal to his familicide in Sidious's training came about a decade into his apprenticeship. He was made to endure deep deprivation, starvation, and extreme cold. These are tactics commonly used by coercive religious sects to dissolve individuality and ensure unflinching loyalty to the leader. Plagueis did not stop with deprivation and exposure. He forced Sidious to recount the murder of his family over and over, and manipulated his perceptions with the dark side of the Force, triggering hallucinations. This tactic also has historic precedence, as it has been utilized by states as a possible means of dissolving the self and making subjects more compliant. These techniques are commonly paired with hallucinogenic drugs, the effects of which Plagueis was able to mimic through his Force abilities. Although this failed to cement the kind of fanatical loyalty in Sidious that his master was hoping for, it did steep him further in negative emotions, which drive connection to the dark side of the Force. The combat training he received must have been impeccable, as Darth Sidious was a deadly, if infrequent, warrior. He eventually defeated legendary swordsman Grandmaster Yoda and trained the formidable menace to the Jedi, Darth Maul, who he also eventually defeated in single combat quite easily. Although Count Dooku was a renowned duelist by the time he assumed the nom de guerre of his Darth Tyrannus, Sidious probably imparted a lesson or two regarding the lightsaber. The Zabrak infant, known as Maul, was entrusted to Sidious's care in 54 BBY. The Zabrak people themselves have a long history of association with the Sith. Due to their natural talents as fighters, Sith factions have used them as mercenaries throughout history. Despite fulfilling the role of being Maul's adoptive father, Sidious treated him with all the callous brutality one might expect from a Dark Lord of the Sith. Sidious even personally applied Maul's extensive Sith tattoos, using the incredibly painful experience as a ritual aimed at mental purity. Like every important person in Sidious's life, Maul was expendable, and a means to an end. It is for this reason that Plagueis, still Sidious's master, did not admonish his apprentice for violating the rule of two. Maul was raised to be disposable. At the time of the Naboo incident, just prior to Maul's apparent death, the Zabrak was a seasoned assassin. When Plagueis learned of Anakin Skywalker's presence, and that the youngling could be the Chosen One, created due to his own experimentation with dominating the Force, he demanded that Sidious order Maul to assassinate Qui-Gon Jinn. This Jedi Master advocated for Anakin's training as a Jedi Knight to a reluctant council, so Plagueis believed that the potential threat to his ascendancy could be eliminated with Jinn, there being nobody else willing to train him. The Telos Holocron, on the other hand, contains records left by Sidious that this was part of his counter-scheme running concurrently with Plagueis' grand plan. He had wanted Jinn dead because he wanted Obi-Wan to train Anakin, perhaps inadequately, paving the way for the Chosen One's fall to the dark side later in life. Just as Sidious's apprentice was expendable, so too it was his own master. Shortly before being elected to the position of Supreme Chancellor, the apprentice betrayed the master, as the rule of two dictates. He plied his master with alcohol, and once the moon passed out, attacked him with Force lightning. It was not an easy death for Darth Plagueis the Wise. Sidious took his time, savoring the pain of his surrogate father, bringing him to the brink of death with arcs of dark side lightning, then relenting before killing the man, over and over again. He was sure to thoroughly mock Plagueis, and claimed responsibility for such grand plan elements as a Yinkor uprising, Maul, the Naboo incident, a clone army, and Count Dooku's fall to the dark side. Plagueis had believed that it was he who conceived of these, and that the grand plan's success was owed to his ingenuity. An interesting detail in the incident is the anger Sidious expressed towards his master for manipulating a confused boy into murdering his family. Sidious himself had already manipulated at least one confused boy into murdering for his own personal gain, and would do so again in short order. The manner of execution Sidious chose for his master, attacking while he slept, inspired Sidious to give up the habit. For the rest of his life, it is said that Darth Sidious required only a brief meditation in the Force to achieve all the restoration most humans required 8 hours of unconscious vulnerability to do so. Prior to the beginning of the Clone Wars, Sidious received confirmation that the long con he had begun a decade earlier was working. A terrible disturbance echoed through the Force. It emanated from a primitive village on an outer rim backwater world. Those gifted in the Force felt it as far away as the core. Both Sidious and Yoda felt the disturbance of innocent lives slaughtered in rage. Anakin Skywalker had wiped out a tribe of Tusken in retribution for the murder of his mother. The spirit of Qui-Gon cried out from the grave, heard only by Yoda. The personality traits which Darth Plagueis believed made Sheev the ideal candidate for a figurehead tyrant are also features of antisocial personality disorder, also known as ASPD. They include a distinct lack of empathy, a pattern of manipulating others for personal gain, and an inflated sense of self-importance. There is more evidence of this disorder earlier in Sheev's life, as it is a characteristic in ASPD for people to be habitual criminals, as he was throughout his childhood. His criminal behavior continued throughout his life as he ordered and occasionally performed many murders and other forms of assault, though he never suffered legal consequences as a result. The unique moral code Sheev developed as a child may also be evidence of the impaired moral conscience common to people with ASPD. Other unconscionable decisions in Palpatine's life were less instrumental. For the most part, all of his crimes, dishonesty, and manipulation served a purpose. However, there are instances in which he displayed sadism, though without evidence of associated paraphilia. For example, he killed rival senator Pax Thiem of the Grand Protectorate by immolation when a lightsaber thrust or lightning blast could have sufficed. When Maul resurfaced later and tried to exact vengeance from his former master, Sidious easily defeated him and then used lightning and the same bludgeoning technique used on Kasinga to hurt and humiliate the Zabrak. There were other moments in his life when he chose to extend the pain of his enemies, and so lost the opportunity to kill them outright. The weakness of inferiors.
You will devote yourself to the idea of domination.
Sheev Palpatine's political career began in 54 BBY, when the senator of the Chamal sector appointed him ambassador. The senator, Vidar Kim, was a conservative politician who wanted to keep Naboo closed to the wider galaxy. Palpatine's duplicity is apparent here again, as he personally opposed such policies. But his ambassadorial position served higher ambitions. Like so many people who put their trust in Sheev, Kim was murdered by the viper he welcomed into his life. After several family members were killed in a tragic speeder accident, Senator Kim's behavior became unpredictable. Such unreliability did not suit the Sith grand plan, and Plagueis ordered Palpatine to have him eliminated. Sheev had his trusted political cloak and dagger man, Sate Pestage, make the necessary assassination arrangements. Senator Kim's funeral was held at the Royal Embassy on Naboo. It was here that his son, Jedi Knight Ronhar Kim, met his father's predecessor, Senator Palpatine. As he seemed able to do with almost anybody, Palpatine quickly earned Ronhar's trust, and the two had a friendship that lasted over a decade. Ronhar had the same fatal flaw as his father. Palpatine used Senator Kim's death to foment suspicion in the Senate against the Trade Federation. This tension between the Senate and the Federation was crucial to the grand plan and culminated in the secession crisis and ultimately the Clone Wars. The Chamal sector, over which Palpatine was now senator, consisted of 36 star systems, 40,000 associated colonies, and 300,000 barren stars. His senatorial reign lasted from 52 to 32 BBY. This 22-year period, to outward appearances, was a quiet political career. In reality, the senator from Naboo was always busy, arranging pawns, training apprentices, and writing several important books and essays. Though he had the talent, and from Plagueis probably the resources, to have a skyrocketing political career, he took things slow. He wanted the rest of the galaxy to see him as a non-entity, or just one more ineffectual politician who could be bought and sold by corporations like all the rest. After the Naboo crisis and his subsequent election as Supreme Chancellor, several attempts were made on Palpatine's life. The most significant involved the infiltration of an organization previously thought to be incorruptible, the Senate Guard. Chancellor Palpatine and his longtime friend, now Jedi Master Kim, took a stroll through the Senate corridors, flanked by two blue-clad Senate guards. The guards pulled weapons on the senator, but they were no match for Master Kim. After this incident, Palpatine reluctantly acquiesced to the creation of the Red Guard for his exclusive protection. Having a special forces unit who answered exclusively to the executive branch was, of course, only one more part of the grand plan, and the assassination attempt was also orchestrated by Palpatine. The equipment and early members of the Red Guard came from an organization that had been under the thrall and manipulation of the Sith for centuries, the Sun Guard. These feared mercenaries were a patriarchal cult initially focused on sun worship, as opposed to the matriarchal, moon-worshipping Ichani society from which they diverged. At some point, their theology became obsessed with the Force, and a prophecy about a son of suns emerged, which the Order of Sith Lords took advantage of. In time, the Sun Guard became a Sith war cult. The iconic visored helmets, Force pikes, and armor of the Red Guard, eventually renamed Royal Guard, were all directly inspired from the Sun Guard. During the Clone Wars, Kim discovered evidence leading him to believe that the Sith were behind the war, and that they were hiding in plain sight, in the Galactic Senate. He proposed a plan to expose the second Sith to the most powerful man he knew, then Supreme Chancellor Palpatine. All they had to do, Kim reasoned, was test the blood of every senator from midichlorians. Whoever had the highest count would clearly be the second Sith. Palpatine convinced him to wait before revealing his plans. Kim agreed, and he and his Padawan departed Coruscant for a doomed mission on Mersin. Sidious orchestrated this battle to end with Kim's death, and the battle droids were only too eager to comply.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Tired from a hard day in the plasma mines? Sleepy after listening to our beloved Emperor's State of the Galaxy address? Give yourself a well-deserved break and energy boost with the crunchiest treat in the universe, the Order 66 cookie. Come for the crunch, stay for the delightful aftertaste. Talk to your local Imperial officer or Compnor administrator to find out how you can obtain a package of this delightful treat. Every package of Order 66 cookies are lovingly hand-selected and picked by Stormtrooper TK555, ensuring that the quality and durability you expect from your peaceful and prosperous empire are in every bite.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. I'm Sam.
This is Christian.
Hey, this is Jordan.
All right, guys. Christian, how are those Order 66 cookies?
Delicious.
Yeah. Good. Don't get any crumbs on the control panel again, though. Our R2 unit's vacuum cleaner is broken. So today we're talking about Sheev Palpatine, a.k.a. Palpatine, a.k.a. Darth Sidious, a.k.a. Emperor Palpatine, a.k.a. the Emperor.
I was hoping you were going to drop just the Emperor.
So he's... this is, again, one of those episodes where in the writing of it, like, I started out dreading it, and then as I got more into reading his Wikipedia pages and associated pages, I started getting more and more excited about writing it. Because unlike the other episodes, I don't have to, like, stretch for a narrative and, like, wade through 10,000 random stories of Han Solo went here, Lando Calrissian got shot down by this girl on that moon,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera.
Like the serialized, individual, compartmentalized stories.
Palpatine's got a real arc,
right,
embedded into his lore.
Yeah.
Like in the first trilogy and in the prequel trilogy as well, he's got that. And then also I think he's unique as a character in the Legends canon in that he very much has a connection to almost all major periods of like Star Wars history.
He's a thread that runs through, yeah.
The Darth Sidious lineage, his backstory goes all the way back
to like the first schism in the Jedi order almost, right? And then he goes all the way forward into infinities. There are still people like Palpatine cults and stuff. And I don't think there's any other characters that really...
Yeah, some of them are self-contained or legendary from the past, but...
He sort of encompasses the whole of the Legends material.
Yeah, really. And even the Skywalker saga only really starts at the birth of, exactly. of Anakin. So.
And as we discussed in the episode, Plagueis, Tenebris, Sidious, they're all doing important stuff
behind
long before
yeah.
Anakin Skywalker is a moat in Shmi's eye.
Yeah, I really like how there is like a build-up to the character we have all experienced in the original trilogy, really. I like some of the backstory, how Machiavellian he is, you know, and how... he's a very ambitious sort of politician, but knows exactly how ambitious he should appear to be to everyone. You know, he intentionally doesn't stand out to people so that he doesn't draw undue attention to himself.
That really came across that I didn't realize about Palpatine before, is his political career was like intentionally stagnant. Until like just the second.
He was
holding himself back just like a spider, like waiting for its prey to
but
come.
even as like a character arc, if you kind of read some of it as a child in adolescence, he was very kind of reckless and was into like the speeder bike racing and committing petty crimes. But once he sort of came under the tutelage of Plagueis and grew up a little, he became far more disciplined. And that made his like sociopathy, if you will, far more insidious, if you will.
Yeah, that made him much more dangerous.
Yeah.
Much better if he could have just gone to jail for killing those people.
Or just been like a wrecking ball.
On his
been
speeder
like,
bike.
Yeah, yeah. Just
thrown reckless. His life away.
Yeah, just, yeah. Just spent his family fortunes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just... been a general mess of a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other interesting thing too, like you're saying about being insidious, is if you think about the movies across at least the first six, he doesn't have a lot of screen time for a character that's.
I'm glad
that
you brought
important.
This up because I got a great point. Yeah, about
and he doesn't
this.
Even appear until you know in person until the last one.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, he does appear in The Empire Strikes Back, but very briefly,
only via hologram, right?
I can't remember if
I'm pretty sure it's only via
the
hologram.
Second one.
Because there's a big parade when his shuttle arrives. I can't remember if that's...
I thought that was on the third.
Well, someone fact check us.
Yeah.
I mean, six. I don't know.
Someone will be yelling at their podcast.
Yes.
But either way, he doesn't have a lot of screen time. You only see him like at the end in person, like as a real one-on-one threat. And you don't know a lot about him, you know?
Yeah.
He's always just the big bad in the background.
Right.
But that is what he is. And he's been in the background since day one, too. Like, always pulling the strings and moving the story without people realizing it.
And he's also, at the same time, like, going back to that, he's trying to create this outer facade of not being that threatening or capable. Is he just dresses in very simple black robes, and he's clearly kind of decrepit and old. Like
hunched over, has a cane,
He's scary in that he's creepy, but not
you're not physically intimidating.
You're not afraid of him.
Not like Vader.
Yeah.
But even in the prequel trilogy, he's almost presented as like compassionate and caring, right?
Yeah.
Like
this is what I wanted to say about how his brief screen time. So much like if anybody's seen Silence of the Lambs, that movie is famous for its sociopathic villain, Hannibal Lecter. And he's on screen, I think, for 11 minutes or something low in that movie.
Oh, wow.
Because his character is both played and written just so well that it makes the impression that that's all. And Hannibal Lecter in that movie, he's not even part of the main plot. He's technically a subplot.
Yeah.
He's not even the bad guy in that movie.
Yeah.
But his fingerprints, like his aura.
Anybody remembers. Yes. And I think... it's not quite to the same degree because there's lots of other memorable things about Star Wars, obviously. But he's not on screen very much.
Yeah.
But at least for me, even as a kid, Emperor Palpatine definitely what's a very effective, creepy villain.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And just seemed more evil than Darth Vader. No doubt, right?
He was the embodiment of evil. Vader was like the poor sucker that got.
And you can almost relate to Vader on a human level, right?
Yeah.
But there's no redemption for Palpatine whatsoever.
From day one.
Yeah. From this episode, it seems like from birth he was evil. And he
even
was,
his dad sensed
his dad literally wanted to kill him because he was so evil.
Yeah, have you guys ever read Ender's Game?
I haven't read it. I saw the movie, but I heard the movie wasn't.
I have never actually seen the movie.
But I've heard it's very good science fiction, but
it's pretty good. But like, there's actually kind of a similar character that kind of reminded me of Palpatine, and it's Ender's older brother, Peter, I believe his name is. And he sort of like, from a very young age, he's actually much like Palpatine, is sort of like not the best academically, and Ender is far more competent in the game. But like the game in Ender's Game, his older brother like isn't selected to go because he's not good enough. But his older brother is like also a sociopath, like kills animals in the woods and skins them, but it also wants to take over the world, you know. So I thought it was kind of I'm just wondering if anyone knows if like Palpatine is in any way inspired by that. But I think Ender's Game was written in the 80s.
Yeah, I feel like there is sort of.
But there were definitely, to me, a lot of contrasts between these two characters. It seemed a little.
And I think part of the Palpatine character is just sort of a part of a story that's hard to avoid when you're dealing with these stories about totalitarian dictatorships in gigantic galaxy-spanning societies. I think you just run into Palpatine like characters,
yeah,
just because it's easier or whatever,
the setting, yeah.
Just by virtue of the setting, yeah. And then I also think Star Wars is really heavily influenced by Dune,
right?
And yeah. Emperor Palpatine is a lot, his depiction is very similar to some of the Emperor characters and some of the leader characters in Dune,
yeah,
to wit, Jabba the Hutt. That character, I believe, is essentially the George Lucas version of Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, who's this like, he's the arch villain.
House Harkonnen,
yeah. He's super evil and gluttonous and gigantic,
yeah.
And like, Jabba eventually needs to get around on a hover sled because he's so obese. Baron Harkonnen also has to have repulsor suspenders in order to move around because he weighs that much, and it's made clear that it's because of his gluttony, right? He actually wants to eat himself.
And apparently, Palpatine needs a big robotic arm to move him around.
That was my next point, is that although I will stand by Ian McDiarmid, who's played Palpatine in all.
Yeah, that's another except for one thing
scene,
about Palpatine.
One scene, except for one scene, that's right.
He didn't play Palpatine, but.
And I think it's his depiction of Chancellor Palpatine in the prequel trilogy, considering what he had to work off of from the same character, essentially, in Return of the Jedi and stuff, it's a very different portrayal.
Yeah.
But they're both very good and very effective, I think. And then that's the problem sort of with Disney's, now that I sort of look back and I've had some distance from watching the movie, is that they really made Palpatine very arch. You know what that term is? Arch. So it's like the cartoonish caricature mustache twirling type of villain. Right. Like, we're evil for the sake of being evil. And that's kind of what that sort of grimdark aesthetic did to Palpatine, is it added extra layers of Palpatine that Palpatine himself wouldn't even like. Because
it's a betrayal of the character.
Yeah, because he wants people to not know just how dangerous he is. He wants them to get the impression that he's a feeble old man.
He is the Phantom Menace.
He's the Phantom Menace. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And putting him in that giant, very cool, if I had a disability.
You would like to be strapped
to a robot arm? That impeded my movement. I want a giant robo arm with tanks of drugs going directly into my
carotid. I thought it was artery. Like a very visually stunning, like cool looking.
It was super sweet.
As
to
much
look
as
at.
I despise that movie, like that is one of, like, not just the robot arm, but just
the aesthetic.
Palpatine, everything about him, Kim.
And the cultists and stuff. It was cool.
So anyway. I'm glad we talked about sociopaths and killing animals and stuff. Jordan officially brought down the level of discourse to the mire of violence and depravity that I like things to be at. All right. So I'm going to pick that current up and we're going to do some armchair psychometry. Now, psychometry,
my favorite kind.
as I teased earlier, is not just a telepathic ability native to the kefir species. Quinlan Vos, if you know your Star Wars, was a notable kefir who used psychometric abilities. But a psychometrist is also a person who administers psychological evaluations. Pretty almost
by touching people, right?
By touching them, yes. And then they know what's wrong with you. No, they're just glorified spreadsheet filler outers, essentially. But it's a position that requires some skill and some knowledge and some training, which I don't have, and I don't pretend I have, and neither of us are pretending that we're in anywhere qualified to administer a psychometric evaluation.
But we're going to do it anyways.
But we are going to do it anyways. So what we're going to be talking about here is, he's a Canadian psychologist, actually. His name is Dr. Robert Hare. I actually did read his book called The Psychopath Checklist, in which he sort of talks about the theory of what a psychopath is as opposed to somebody with antisocial personality disorder. And I'm really mad at him at an academic level for continuing the use of that just confusing term psychopath, because people throw it around a lot, not really knowing entirely
because of popular media
what it means. You just use it for basically a violent person is a psychopath. Is sort of the
cultural,
the lowest common denominator interpretation of that. And then Robert Hare just sort of continued that by doing actual academic work that used the terminology psychopath, which I'm just really annoyed with. So he ensured that it stayed in the culture, that dumb term. But anyway, in his book, a psychopath is different from somebody with antisocial personality disorder in that essentially they're more intelligent and more violent. So they're essentially the Palpatine type of person, right? Most quote-unquote evil people, and this is especially true of people with antisocial personality disorder, end up in prison, right? Because they have really bad impulse control and they don't have that moral conscience, which means they're fine with drinking and driving. They're fine with stealing. They'll run drugs over the border if you just ask them to, because why not? There's a whole complicated biology about the way people with this disorder may or may not experience fear, which I won't get into right now, but that's just a thing. And that's the other thing about antisocial personality disorder that you should also keep in mind, why I don't like psychopath, is that the vast majority of our research on this disorder comes from prison populations,
right?
So which is obviously
already going to skew the data.
A very self-selecting group, right? So the thinking is basically that people with ASPD are super likely to be criminals, but it's like, yeah, but...
Because you only studied criminals.
Yeah, look at the socioeconomic background of people in prison, right? These are poor people with fractured families and low education and all this stuff.
Just a quick insert there too about whether or not people with these disorders are born or made.
Right.
Because of Palpatine's didn't have a great background either.
Yeah. So I had a professor in university, a psych professor, and one of the favorite things, I believe it was, oh God, what was his name? Peter Henze. He's studied baboons mostly. And one of his things was the nature or nurture debate, the most important non-issue of all time, because all behavior in all organisms is obviously both nature and nurture. Right, There's no teasing those two things apart. Right, they interact with each other. And it's just kind of a silly
I agree.
It's a meaningless dichotomy to me. So born, made. Just ask, are people born or made? I don't know.
Yeah, it's sort of an obvious answer that it's not.
It's both.
Yeah.
There's clearly some genetic loading, I think, to sociopathy. And I think, like Palpatine maybe just would have been a bad student, and or maybe he would have been like George Bush, you know,
who
was kind of a drinker and a rabble rouser and stuff.
Lucas was inspired directly by Nixon, supposedly.
Yeah.
The character of Palpatine. So,
I don't know anything about Nixon's background. I do know about George Bush's background. And he seems like, you know, I sort of have a bias that I think all politicians are sociopaths.
That's exactly what Lucas thought, too.
By definition. So I definitely
Padme is a upstanding senator. Sam, how dare you smear her name?
She may be the only one, and she was just a pawn for Bail another Organa? Sociopath. So anyway,
Binks?
We're getting way off topic.
Yes, back to your
checklist. To the psychopath checklist. So basically how you administer this, and we're not going to be administering it exactly because Palpatine's not real. I don't know if you know this or not. And
I feel a lot better now.
So we can't do the clinical interview, but the checklist, how you administer it, you do a clinical interview and then you cross-reference the contents of your interview against like his prison record and interviews with his family and bosses and all that stuff.
Using what we do have, we can.
So we're kind of going to do that aspect of the psychopath checklist. And so I'm just going to read off these diagnostic traits, and then we're going to together, and you guys can our viewers can follow along with us, see if there's anything we know about Palpatine that lines up with these symptoms, we'll call them. So, for scoring, it's out of 40. I don't know exactly how you score it, but so you get a maximum of 2 points for each thing. 1 point is kind of, 2 is definitely, 0 is not at all. So that's fairly simple. So item A, glib and superficial charm.
I'd say he fits that bill.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm going to argue it down to a 1 because I don't think he's that glib because he's so good of an actor. Like glib is sort of you just sort of cast things off and you're just like, that's not important. Make a joke.
Right.
You just sort of cheerfully undermine somebody's like
concerns.
That's glib. He doesn't seem that glib to me. His charm might be superficial, so I'm giving him a 1. A grandiose or exaggeratedly high estimation of self.
Absolutely.
Literally thought he should be the king of the universe. Yes.
But he was, so. is that overestimation or is that just qualified for the position?
You know, he believed that's a good point. I'll leave that to the philosophers. I'm just giving him a 2. I'm making an executive decision here. Need for stimulation. So we talked about his
risky behavior,
his stealing.
I guess, yeah, when he was younger.
He was a speeder pilot. That's super dangerous.
Conducting a war from two sides, you could argue.
Also,
a bit thrilling.
I kind of think his...
but I don't think he did that for the thrill.
Yeah. Well, he might have.
A little bit of A.
I think his childhood obsession, and that's the really interesting thing about him, is he was sort of a self-taught Sith almost by the time Plagueis met him.
Yeah.
But that was entirely self-directed. And the Sith, to the extent that people knew who they were, which nobody really, very few people did in his time.
Yeah.
But they were viewed as like evil and dark and wrong. So I think his interest in Sith stuff is also more of that thrill-seeking
exhilaration,
behavior. Just because it's antisocial, he's interested in it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give him a 2
for
need for stimulation.
I would say it's his strongest trait, but it's definitely there.
Also, the fact that he gave up sleep entirely at a certain point in his life.
I think that's less thrill and more like he's paranoid, extreme paranoid.
Possible. Okay, going on. Pathological lying.
Pathological lying. That's pretty obvious. Yes. That's just his entire life. He never said a true thing, basically.
Just like politicians.
Yeah. Cunning and manipulativeness. 2. Yes, definitely a 2. Constantly doing that. Lack of remorse or guilt. 2. Definitely a 2. Shallow affect, superficial emotional responsiveness. See, I think I would actually give him a 0 on this because he is A, so good at putting on a public face for people when he wants it, and he's very good at making people believe that he's experiencing emotions. And then he does, I think, clearly experience genuine emotions, like when he's electrocuting Luke Skywalker. Yeah. He's gleeful. He's smiling. He loves it.
Yeah, but when he expresses like care for the Nubians,
the question is it shallow or superficial? I would say
it's superficial.
Superficial. Okay, I'll give him a one.
Yeah, I think
I think it reads
can
so,
meet in the middle
so well, because part of what this category would be and what I would be looking for if I was actually doing this test and I was talking to Palpatine's like friends from college is I would be looking for a sense that they got a sense that he was faking emotions, right? That there was something hollow about him.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there really was. I don't think people knew because he was so good at manipulating.
Okay.
So I give him a one. Callousness and lack of empathy. Yep, that's a number two.
Be a two, yeah.
Parasitic lifestyle. So that's interesting. I don't know if it's a two necessarily. Because
like
I mean,
he did sort of need a lot of people to help get him to the top.
He did, but
he uses people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like he definitely like he used well, yeah. he used Plagueis.
Yeah, right? That's true.
He uses everyone.
He manipulated Plagueis.
He was able to manipulate his own master.
From the beginning of their relationship. Yeah. So yeah, I guess that's true.
Maybe a one.
Yeah. But then like his initial fortune just came he just inherited a bunch of money, right? So but he's not
a freeloader. And it's not like he doesn't put effort into his own achievement.
If you've ever had the displeasure of like hanging out with people who are deeply into an addictive disease, they often live very parasitic lifestyles sometimes that can appear like that.
Yeah, I guess maybe he's a zero. I don't know.
I'd give him a one. I could even argue for a two. Poor behavioral controls. I think
early on it seemed
early on,
but he was able to curb that with seems like a pretty strict discipline.
Yeah, once he met Plagueis, he definitely curbed that, and I would say there's like almost no evidence for him at being impulsive later on in life. He was the opposite of impulsive, right? He was making decisions.
Cunning and manipulative.
He was very
he was
planning 10 steps ahead.
Making decisions 20 years in advance, right? Sexual promiscuity. So this
depends.
Is interesting.
Is it the new lore? Just kidding.
Even in the old lore.
It's
a little bit confusing. I'm not clear on this, but both Trioculus and Triclops were possible illegitimate children of Emperor Palpatine.
But how? Because if it's through cloning or like
that's
genetic manipulation.
I'm not entirely clear.
I would almost give it a zero. Even if he did sleep.
That's
with
just
people,
one person as far as we know.
It's never really.
It's not like he has a harem of women.
Yeah.
If you did see young Palpatine though, he probably could. I'm just
probably,
saying.
But no evidence so
flying
far.
That speeder
we have no evidence.
Yeah, we'll just say zero. Yeah.
He's got daddy's money. Yeah.
Early behavior problems too.
Oh yeah, definitely had a lot of lack of realistic long-term goals.
Zero.
They were grandiose.
I think he had very long.
In a vacuum, they're very grandiose and unrealistic. But the fact that he actually
attained them,
you guys have convinced me. Those are completely realistic, apparently. Again, impulsivity in his childhood,
as younger, but not as older.
When he became a man, no. Irresponsibility, that's sort of the same thing.
Idea.
And I would almost put it in a zero, because when you're a child, you don't have responsibilities.
Yeah,
right?
And especially his lifestyle as like an opulent rich kid. Like,
yeah, so
he had a ton of responsibility when he was older,
but he took care of things, right? Like,
that's true. Yeah,
galaxy of responsibility.
He managed. Yeah.
So I'm just giving him a zero on irresponsibility because I don't think he was really as a child mismanaging.
Yeah, didn't squander like
his commitments.
Money. Or anything. Yeah.
There you go. Failure to accept responsibility for its own actions.
Hard. Yeah.
I would, you know,
like
would,
all of his actions, he.
I would think I would give him a zero. He takes full responsibility.
Yeah, he knows
everything.
What he's doing.
Yeah, he's very like.
Although granted,
he like doesn't believe he made any mistakes.
The people that he killed.
He literally says he would do it all again in the exact same way.
Yeah, that one's rough.
Maybe, perhaps, again, only when he was younger, like his
when he killed those
grievances towards his father and stuff like that.
Yeah,
there could be some of that.
But even then, there's no sense of he's making mistakes and saying it was Sheev's fault, right? Yeah. Although I haven't read Plagueis in a long time, so they might.
I don't know.
I might give him a one just because I suspect there might be something in there, at least in his childhood. All right. Many short-term marital relationships, zero. Juvenile delinquency, two.
Killing your own family counts.
Revocation of conditional release. So he was never actually incarcerated, so we can't give him a score on this.
Yeah, it has to be zero, but he probably would have been had he not.
He was getting expelled from school for the same things over and over again.
Well, and he
did
kill people. He just got
away with it.
Authorities were bribed. Yeah. So.
Criminal versatility. This is an interesting one. Because on the one hand is zero because he was never actually convicted of anything.
But does that just make him a good criminal, though?
But on the other hand, two because he did like pretty much every crime there is.
Yeah. and got away with it.
Yeah, and got away with it. So I'm giving him a two. Yeah,
is it a crime if you don't get caught?
Exactly. So I will quickly score him now. And I just did all that math in my head and... Darth Sidious has a score of 24 on my sort of improvised psychopath checklist. So to compare his score with some other notable psychopaths, as Robert Hare calls them, Richard Ramirez is probably the big name who scores closest to him. He got a 31 out of a possible 40. Darth Sidious had that 24. I'll also say Ted Bundy, who scored a 39 out of 40. His life was the most like Darth Sidious's because they both had a long childhood history of breaking the law and stealing things. And then also in college, essentially, they both had the same job, which was like spying on a rival political party. Yeah. So that's also a funny detail of sort of...
I wonder if that was an intentional like nod.
It didn't seem specific enough because it wasn't like exactly what Ted Bundy was doing because Darth Sidious was actually selling like valuable, like the equivalent of the president of the United States. Sidious was stealing secrets from that guy and giving it to the person he's running against, right?
Right. Yeah.
But... what Ted Bundy was doing was just like local state level politics, which is a totally different kettle of fish.
Yeah. So, like 24 seems like probably high, but not as high as some psychopaths. Do we have like sort of a rough idea what the average person would score on this?
I haven't looked this up. But my feeling is like the average person... maybe around 20 or so. But then part of the way this checklist is scored is also with triangulating data. So the psychiatrist who's interviewing you, he's not just scoring it based on what you say as Darth Sidious or Ted Bundy in prison and I bought you coffee and food and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm also, after our interview, going to go take all my notes to the warden and maybe your cellmate and your mom and your dad and your first grade teacher, and I'll get your military records and all your criminal background and everything and score it using that. So it's like, if you just self-report, give it, I don't know. But that's the other thing about the psychopath checklist is it does have a clinical interview, which is different than just reading out these criteria and then scoring it. It's a little more
complicated
than I made it seem.
Fair enough.
All right, so we're coming up on Biss. Let's drop out of hyperspace.
We're just hitting a comet storm here.
So we're hitting a force storm, actually.
Okay.
I know we're coming out of the wormhole storm that Palpatine had in Dark
Empire. So if anyone can hear that, I'll pick it, the microphone, pick it up.
Yeah. All right. May the forks be with you.
Into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores Podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.